Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to out across America. They're my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Russ Baker, who's written a fascinating book called Family of Secrets. It's the story of the Bush family, and a lot of things that you never knew about the Bush family, and we're not simply talking about George W. Bush, we're talking about his father, the whole family, and, well, they have a lot of secrets that most people really don't know about, and Russ has done a fascinating job of pulling them all together. Thanks very much for being with us again, Russ.
Well, thank you very much for having me on.
Why don't you just go ahead and tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, who you are, and why you wrote this book.
Sure. I've been an investigative journalist for more than 20 years, working independently, but writing for largely, I think, name-brand publications, ranging from the New York Times to The Nation magazine, Vanity Fair, Esquire, the L.A. Times, the Village Voice, as well as newspapers and magazines in other countries. And I've covered a wide range of topics, including the fall of the Berlin Wall, the overthrow of the Romanian dictator Ceausescu, the collapse of the Soviet Union, genocide in Africa, and so forth. Quite a wide range. My specialty, however, is investigative reporting about abuses of power on the national scene. And I began work on this book, Family of Secrets, I guess you'd say back in 2004, although I began thinking about the Bushes most in earnest in 2003. I'd gone abroad to train investigative journalists in the former Yugoslavia, and at that time we had the invasion of Iraq. I was struck by what had been happening to America. People there were asking me, what is going on with your country? There seems to be so much deception, so much propaganda, and it's very, very hard to tell what is happening. And so I determined to get back to the United States and get to work on trying to understand all of these highly controversial events that were taking place under George W. Bush. And that set me on what turned out to be a remarkable five-year journey. I had no particular agenda, no theory. I just wondered if there was possibly something more to the rise of George W. Bush, who I think is widely regarded as a highly improbable figure to have become President of the United States and most powerful person in the world. And so that's what I've done for 5 years. First two or three years, I traveled around the country, interviewed a lot of people, looked at a lot of documents. And I'd say it was only in about year three or so that I suddenly kind of went down a rabbit's hole, basically, to a whole other understanding of American history over the last, not just 8 years, but actually 50 years. And that's what Family Secrets is. It's a whole new understanding of how power works and how the American presidency is shaped by powerful forces.
And, of course, so much of what we think we know just isn't true. In fact, I remember very well meeting with a group of Christian leaders when we interviewed George W. Bush back in 1999 when he was running for the presidency, and how he told us this story about his Christian conversion and how he had, Billy Graham had led him to the Lord. And you pointed out in your book that this was already contrived, ready to convince Christians of his piety?
That's right. I've got one entire chapter in Family of Secrets just on that topic. That was one of the many things that I discovered, was that how ingenious both George W. Bush and his father had been.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. go right ahead. And you were just mentioning how ingenious both George W. Bush and his father had been in what now?
Well, really, in the uses of classical propaganda techniques in creating sort of false realities and then disseminating them through the mass media and influencing elections. That was one of the things early on I started noticing was the gap between the typical narratives that we were hearing, seeing on television, reading in the major publications, and what I was finding. And one of the first things that struck me was that we were led to believe that George W. Bush was anything but like his father, that he was a very different kind of a person, much more of a true Westerner, an individualist with a whole different set of values. His father was a sort of an East Coast traditional blue blood Episcopal. The son, much more radical in his policies, as you say, born again and so forth. And what I discovered was that they had created all of these stories essentially. And this led me to an understanding of the fact that the father and the son were much closer than they wanted people to know, and that they had made essentially a sort of a political calculation that whereas the father had lost in 1992 for re-election, that the son, they weren't going to let it happen to the son, that the son was going to get elected and re-elected as he did by being cast as an entirely different individual. And so they spent decades creating this image of him as somebody who he simply was not. And so that's about half of Family of Secrets, is that untold story of who George W. Bush really was, what he was really doing all of those years before he became president. The first half of the book is how his father, George H.W. Bush, or Poppy as his nickname is, how Poppy Bush was not the person we thought he was either. And in fact, as you know, you've read the book, Poppy Bush was much more a completely different person than he's been presented as.
And I think, of course, they used the Christian conservative community, the pro-life issue, the traditional family values issues. They used all the issues that appealed to the conservative wing of the Republican Party, the Christian wing of the Republican Party, and of course, they exploited them to their fullest. But there was very little similarity between what they really believed and the image they created. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, I think that would be. I mean, the significant thing here is that
Hold that thought for just a moment, Russ. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Russ is simply pointing out that both George Herbert Walker Bush and George W. Bush were entirely different than the image they projected, and certainly there was a conscious effort to differentiate George Herbert Walker Bush, the Easterner, from George W. Bush, the Westerner, the cowboy who liked to work out and cut brush on his estate there, his home there in Texas, and of course the image that was built of George W. Bush as a conservative evangelical Christian who had been led to the Lord by Billy Graham, and of course he was telling this about his walk on the beach with Billy Graham long before the walk on the beach with Billy Graham ever really occurred. Is that right?
Yes, in Family of Secrets I actually interview the man who sort of put this together for the Bushes, who is himself an evangelical Christian, and he is also a political consultant and a sort of a self-styled historian, and he had been very early advising the father, George H.W. Poppy Bush, about the importance of catering to this rapidly growing political bloc. The first president to do so successfully was actually a Democrat, Jimmy Carter, whose religious credentials I think are undisputed. And then in 1980 you had Ronald Reagan running in the primaries against George H.W. or Poppy Bush. And Ronald Reagan, who also he was not a religious man, but he was an actor and he was very gifted, and he played the role, and he went before these giant rallies and he said, I am your man. I believe in the same things you do. And so he took that vote. He beat Poppy Bush. Reagan became president. Poppy Bush became vice president. And Poppy began listening to what he needed to learn. And this advisor, Doug Weed, who has been interviewed before, but nobody interviewed him to the extent that I did. And I spent hours and hours and hours with him looking at the memos that he supplied to the Bushes. And I actually was able to create a timetable where not only was Weed advising the Bushes of the need to sort of get religion prior to this year in which Billy Graham came to visit with the Bushes and supposedly had this walk on the beach that influenced George W., but that actually, even before that, there's a story floated that an itinerant minister had come through with a traveling show into Midland, Texas, and that George W. Bush had gone to see this man fall into his knees and that he'd seen the light then. What I document is that the year prior to that, this Doug Weed was giving memos to Poppy Bush that were being read, apparently, by George W. Bush on how it was absolutely crucial that they embrace this bloc.
And, of course, we were all exploited. In other words, it was all an image. It was a symbolism over substance. It was rhetoric over reality. And when we met personally with George Bush and with a group of other Christian leaders, about maybe 22 of us at the time, and there were only two of us who could see through the facade, and all the others, and I won't mention their names because they're good people and personal friends, and but, you know, they were all taken in by this sincere a protestation of faith, and it was to challenge it, to question it. It was almost like questioning Billy Graham. It was Billy Graham had brought him to his knees, and in tears had accepted the Lord. And yet, of course, after, as he's closing his term in the presidency, George W. Bush actually admits that there's lots of ways to God, that the Bible really isn't the inerrant word of God, got a lot of good stories in it. And you suddenly see at the very end why they let the public really realize it was all a scam, and so many good Christian leaders were taken in because we wanted to believe. Well, I didn't want to believe. I wanted the truth. But so many people are so naive, and many times Christians are naive, and that's why the Christian leaders rallied behind George Bush. He could do no wrong, even when the lies came out about Iraq, and the lies came out about torture, and the lies came out about certainly so many issues. And yet, of course, he always had the support of the Christian leaders of the United States, and they're good people. But, of course, good people can be deceived. Now, why don't we go back and start, really, where you did, and that was with George Herbert Walker Bush. Because there's a lot about George Herbert Walker Bush that very few people have ever heard about his relationship to the CIA, long before he ever became the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Certainly his part that he played even at the time of the Kennedy assassination, which they've tried to cover up. But you pick up the story, Rush. You know it far better than I.
Well, basically, I was just trying to understand the relationship between the father and the son. And as I said, it became clear to me that it was much closer than the way that it was being characterized for public consumption. And I saw that a section of Family of Secrets is devoted to getting to the bottom of the controversy over George W. Bush's military service and what happened to CBS News and Dan Rather. And I do establish, I think, fairly conclusively in the book, more so than has been done before, that in fact George W. Bush had disappeared from the military almost 2 years before his obligation ran out. I also began seeing that his father, who's never mentioned in any of these accounts, and in fact never even asked, what did you know about what your son was doing or not doing? The father had become the chairman of the Republican Party during this period, at a time when the Vietnam War was going on, and yet nobody asks him, what did you know? And I began to find traces of the father being involved in creating basically a kind of a cover, and a false documentation to paper over the son's failure to serve, and I began thinking, boy, the father is much more involved here. And so as I looked at the father, I saw that he'd been CIA director for a single year in 1976, brought in by Gerald Ford, seemingly with no experience or qualifications for that. And as I began examining him, I started seeing traces of involvement with intelligence way before he was CIA director, not just in the 70s, but all the way back in 1963, and even in 1953. And in Family of Secrets, I document all of this with more than 1,000 footnotes and quite a few declassified documents. We see George H.W. Bush in 1953 starting a tiny offshore oil drilling company. According to these documents, he was partnered with a man who was an active-duty CIA officer who supposedly left the agency to start this oil company with him. And, of course, one wonders, how did George H.W. Bush, supposedly a civilian living in West Texas, even know this, a CIA officer based in New York? They start this company. We see this tiny firm with only a couple of rigs, basically, and they're traveling all over the world to hot spots. It sure doesn't look like an oil company. Certainly, the activities are far outsized for the size of the company. So we see that. And then in 1963, a year in which George H.W. Bush has publicly stated that he could not remember where he was, on November 22, 1963, the day that Kennedy died, and you and I have discussed how really everybody remembers where they were that day.
Absolutely, but George Herbert Walker Bush doesn't remember where he was, but apparently J. Edgar Hoover was sending him a directives, wasn't it? What was this all about?
Well, yeah, and just to back up for a second, this is his sort of modus operandi. George H.W. Bush, whenever he was involved with something that was controversial, he'd always claim he didn't know anything about it. So when he was vice president and had the portfolio for covert operations, he claimed famously that he was, quote, out of the loop about the Iran-Contra affair, when in fact he was so deeply immersed in it. And so in 1963, he says he doesn't remember where he was, but in Family of Secrets, I provide documents, one of which is a memo from J. Edgar Hoover referring to the day after the Kennedy assassination, and they are consulting about the Cuban exiles in the United States and possible risk of them taking some kind of action against Castro on the basis of feeling that the Kennedy assassination freed them up to do this. And they're very concerned about this, and there's a briefing, the FBI and a couple of intelligence officers, and it specifically names one of them as George Bush of the CIA. And this, of course, the man who doesn't remember where he was. So this has him working with Cuban exiles who basically hated Kennedy at the time of the Kennedy assassination. There's a second memo, and this memo is from the day of the assassination, and in this one, the same man, George H.W. Bush, who cannot remember where he was during that period, is now calling the FBI office, not in Dallas, where Kennedy was shot, but in Houston, and saying, I'm George H.W. Bush, I'm a private citizen in the oil business, I don't want my name put out publicly, but I'd like to offer some information on who may have shot the president. Now, he's calling at 1:45 p.m., exactly around the time that the world is learning that Kennedy is dead. He offers a tip. I investigate that tip in Family of Secrets. I have an entire chapter on that. In fact, I have 4 chapters of all new information relating to the Kennedy assassination, all with documented facts. And we have Bush making this call. I trace the man who's named in the memo, even though he says, I don't know this man, as it's just something I've heard, turns out he did know the man. He also knew that the man had nothing to do with the assassination. And in fact, as I show in Family of Secrets, Bush's own assistant in the Harris County Republican Party was at the home of this man, the supposed suspect, giving him an alibi. It's a very complicated story, a very important story, because it suggests that he had some sort of awareness of what was going on that day.
And, of course, you cover this beautifully, even the fact that George Herbert Walker Bush has openly admitted, in fact, a friend of mine has a letter from George Bush, saying that he knew this man who was the handler of Lee Harvey Oswald, a man named George Morenschild. Why would George Herbert Walker Bush be close to the man who was the handler for Lee Harvey Oswald? Lots of unanswered questions, aren't there?
There sure are, and I spent another chapter in Family Secrets just on this man, De Morenschild.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Go right ahead.
I devote an entire chapter of Family of Secrets specifically to this man, De Morenschild. He's mentioned here and there in certain accounts, but...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Past 28 years, during 20 of those 28 years, a member of the Bush family was either the president or the vice president of the United States. 20 of the 28 years, people really don't think about that thing. And then, of course, what Russ has brought out very, very vividly in his book, certainly is the fact that there was an association between George Herbert Walker Bush and the Kennedy assassination, and that has been totally suppressed. And he has the memos from J. Edgar Hoover and FBI memos to document that fact. So something is very, very strange. And, of course, George Herbert Walker Bush, the man who served as both vice president and president of the United States and ambassador of the United Nations and director of the CIA, he can't remember where he was on the day that John Kennedy was assassinated. So you pick up the story.
Sure. What I was saying was that once I had established that the elder Bush had this sort of secret past, that far from being an oil man and a congressman and so on, he appears to have been involved with very, very deep cover intelligence work. His oil company putting its rigs in sensitive locations, such as the KSAL Bank off of Cuba prior to the period of the Bay of Pigs invasion, many other very interesting facts like that. And then we see him, he's elected to the House of Representatives, and then Richard Nixon is elected president, and then begins this very rapid rise to the top for George H.W. Bush. And I focus quite a bit on that in Family of Secrets because I've never seen that written about anywhere, what really was going on there. And the more conventional biographies just say that he was a promising politician and Nixon recognized that and promoted him. But in fact, I was struck by the fact that he was promoted to all these positions for which he was not qualified. He was made UN ambassador, as you mentioned, and this was 1970 after he lost the U.S. Senate bid. He had no experience or knowledge in foreign affairs. He even would joke about that with his friends. And then he was made in 1973 at the height of the Watergate scandal. He was appointed the chairman of the Republican National Committee, another surprising appointment that seemed very, very strange. And then a few years later, after Nixon was ousted and Gerald Ford became president, he was appointed to be the director of the CIA, again, supposedly with no relevant experience. So I thought, this is just too strange, and why is Richard Nixon promoting him to all these positions? And what I discovered, and this is again one of the significant revelations of Family of Secrets, is that the relationship with Richard Nixon and the Bush family predated that by decades, that all the way back in the 1940s, when Richard Nixon was first drafted to run for Congress, Prescott Bush, the grandfather and a very powerful investment banker, who had his own connections to intelligence, had been involved in recruiting Nixon to get into politics. And one comes away with the very clear impression that the Bushes were so instrumental in Nixon's rapid rise in the House to the U.S. Senate and then quickly on to the vice presidency under Eisenhower that he felt beholden to them and that that is why he promoted George H.W. Bush to all of these positions. But what we see is we see the Bush family and large corporations backing them, pressuring Nixon once he becomes president. They want him to make George H.W. Bush his vice president. And he doesn't want to do it, and he resists. And we see a letter from Prescott Bush, very angry about Nixon refusing to do this. Then what we see is we see the Watergate scandal. And since we know now that George H.W. Bush had a background in intelligence connected to the CIA, we begin to look at his tenure as the head of the Republican Party as Nixon goes down in flames in a whole new light. And in Family of Secrets, I again learned something of which I knew nothing prior to doing this research, and that was that there's a whole different story to Watergate. Watergate is not actually the story we've been told. It's not the story that Woodward and Bernstein told. Of Richard Nixon and a Mitchell and Haldeman and Ehrlichman out of control is the story of those men battling unseen forces that wanted them removed. And those forces, based on all of the evidence, were tied to the military-industrial complex, the Pentagon, and the Central Intelligence Agency, with Poppy Bush again in the mix, again leaving very, very few fingerprints.
And, of course, I think there is very obviously a force behind the scenes that manipulates world events, domestic events. And certainly there was always an invisible force, first behind George Herbert Walker Bush, and then behind George W. Bush. And people have to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. Everything is either illusion or delusion. For reality is usually scoffed at, and illusion is usually king. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Russ Baker, and we're talking about the book Family of Secrets. Did you get very much into Skull and Bones, the secret society that Prescott Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush and George W. Bush all belong to?
I do deal with Skull and Bones to some extent, but I think that what distinguishes, among other things, Family of Secrets from some of the other books is that I worked very hard to leave out anything that had already appeared elsewhere. I really tried to include primarily brand new material. There's been quite a bit written about Skull and Bones. I mean, I don't know quite what to make of it. I think that these sorts of secret groups that they join are primarily of interest as forces for cohesion. They get young men to sort of swear a kind of loyalty to each other. They get them to agree that they will keep secrets and share those secrets throughout their lives, and they get a sense that they have a kind of a joint mission. And so I think that not just those, but also to some extent the Ivy League schools, the prep schools that they went to, the fact that they were very much pressured by their families to date and marry within certain circles, this keeps kind of this power within certain elites. And so I'm interested in sort of the larger forces, and I don't see this as some fantastical sort of, you know, bizarre conspiracy or something like that. I see this just as how things work. And, you know, it's interesting that Americans seem to have very often trouble with the notion that if there might be more going on than the sort of surface skirmishes that we see talked about on those Sunday morning news programs, these kind of partisan skirmishes. But when you go to other countries, and I don't care where those countries are, whether it's Africa or Asia or Europe, and traveled all over the world, they all know that in their countries, power elites are very, very dominant. They accept that. And yet in this country, we sort of don't have that discussion. It's frowned upon, and it's kind of treated as if it's something crazy. But it isn't crazy. That's how powerful people and powerful institutions maintain their power, by exerting influence behind the scenes. And, of course, particularly in a country that is a democracy, it has to be behind the scenes, because if it wasn't, the public would never tolerate it.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And we're going to be back here in just a moment with Russ Baker as we explore the various concepts that are laid out in his book, Family of Secrets, which will tell you a lot of things you've never heard about the Bush family before. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest Russ Baker, the book Family of Secrets. Russ, do you have a website you'd like to get out? We will be carrying your book, but how can people get other additional information? Do you have a website?
Yes, there are a couple of websites. First of all, there's familyofsecrets.com. And people can see some of the clips and excerpts from some of the interviews that I've given. There's also a place there where they can send messages, email messages. Sometimes we get a little bit deluged with them, so it's not always possible to respond to everyone, but we do make the effort. There's another website. We have a nonprofit organization. It's whowhatwhy.com, whowhatwhy.com. And that is our effort to continue doing this kind of research with public support. We don't try to go to corporations, and we don't try to go to the large outfits that typically fund the mainstream media. We are relying on the public's financial support so that we can continue to do this type of work, not only in book form, but also on a more frequent basis, directly to the public, free of charge, on the web.
Well, one of the most interesting and intriguing stories to me was the story of George W. Bush's military service and the scandal that forced Dan Rather off the air. Would you like to cover that? Because I think it is a perfect example of how they manipulate the public into discussing the wrong issue. But please go ahead and develop that idea.
Sure. That is, you've just touched on sort of the third big issue in Family of Secrets. Number of chapters this story kind of weaves in and out of the book. Basically, my conclusion is that one of the reasons that George W. Bush was characterized as having been born again was because it cleaned the slate. Was this notion that anything that had happened prior to that just really didn't matter. And that, you know, the talk was always that, what was it that had happened before that? Well, the idea was that he was a drinker and a partier and so on. But in talking to people who knew him, I came away with the sense that he was no more of that than sort of most people in his circles in those years in Texas. But that, in fact, the real thing that they feared might emerge was this story of failing to fulfill his military obligation. And, of course, when you are running on a platform that is very sympathetic to military adventures, in favor of continued prosecution of wars, and where your support base is made up largely of veterans and people who do believe that military action was warranted in these situations, you cannot stand the scrutiny of the fact that you failed to serve, that you simply ducked out. And so what begins is essentially a sort of a 30-year cover-up. And when we get to 2004 and people are beginning to raise doubts about the basis under which we went into Iraq, and then there's John Kerry, and he's a decorated war hero from one of the most dangerous places in Vietnam, the Bush forces apparently panic, and they realize that they may not be able to get him reelected. The corporations that backed him are deeply concerned that he will be ousted and the policies that they care about will be reversed, and so begins this effort to vilify John Kerry, number one, through the Swift Boat Veterans Group. Number two, they begin an effort to discourage media inquiries, and in Family of Secrets, I document this path and what looks, I think, to most objective observers, to an operation in which CBS News, which was the most aggressive of the major television networks in questioning Bush's record, these documents, which your listeners will recall, were shown on television by the people working with Dan Rather, and then immediately bloggers began claiming that these documents were false. This resulted in Dan Rather basically being pushed out of CBS, and for the remainder of the 2004 election, nobody was willing to question what really happened to George W. Bush. As I establish, I believe, in Family of Secrets, those documents were not clearly fakes, but what they were was they were very, very cleverly engineered in such a way that they basically reflected the truth of what many journalists, not just the CBS journalists, had discovered about Bush's record. There were several tiny anomalies in there, little things that most people would never have noticed, that the CBS people did not notice, that were brought to the public's attention immediately to cast doubt on these documents. In retrospect, that looks like what many of the other things in the book are, covert operations engineered to shape the American, the trajectory of American presidents.
And because basically what it was they were arguing the wrong issue. The issue was not, certainly it should have been, George Bush go into the National Guard to avoid going to Vietnam? Was he a coward? And then when he got into the National Guard, their wing, why he refused to show up? well, is that true or not? No, the issue was, are these papers accurate or not? And the issue became the papers and who prepared the papers and the fact that Dan rather prepared the papers rather than the truth or falsehood of the charge. It's a standard technique. It was really beautifully executed, and I don't have a lot of sympathy for Dan Rather, but I think in this one he certainly got a bad rap.
Well, certainly, and this technique is often called misdirection, and it's they even use it when they do, you know, the shell games and so on. It's kind of like you're looking at one thing, and they say, whoop, look over here, and then while you're looking in the other place, something else is going on, and you're absolutely right. That was what that was. Take the eye off the ball and look at something else. And I actually interviewed, and this is also in Family Secrets, I interviewed George W. Bush's ghostwriter. He was working with him in 1999 when he was running for president on a book that was to come out during the campaign. And as he just explained to me, when he asked George W. Bush what he hoped to do as president, the only thing he could think of, and he said this to him in an unguarded moment, he told him, if I get the chance, I'm going to invade Iraq. He said, I'm going to invade Iraq, and unlike my father, I'm going to go all the way in. I'm going to take Saddam Hussein out. And he said, our advisors have made it clear to me that you can only have a successful presidency if you have a successful war. And he was thinking of Panama and the Grenada and all of these so-called small wars that Reagan and his father had had, and Margaret Thatcher with the Falklands War. And in his mind, he could get in there, invade Iraq, take Saddam Hussein out, and be a hero, and as be seen as the commander-in-chief and not just as the president. Well, of course, this is a major revelation. I learned this in 2004. I went to major news organizations. They were interested. They knew me and my reputation, but I could not get this story out because they were concerned that in the wake of the Dan Rather scandal, all of these kind of stories were just too hot to handle. And so they had successfully cowed the media, and George Bush sailed on to re-election.
And to continue the war in Iraq and to continue the war in Afghanistan. But then, of course, why should we be critical? After all, now we have our troops are still in Iraq. They're going to stay there indefinitely, but there won't be combat troops, and we're expanding the war in Afghanistan. And so we're told one thing, the other goes. When George Bush was in the House of Representatives, was it the president? Why, all of the Democrats were voting against appropriations for the war. Now that Obama's in, all the Republicans are voting against the appropriations for the war. But they were the same ones who supported the war last year. I mean, these people give hypocrisy a bad name.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about all of this, if you think, who benefits from all of this? Qui bono, as they say in Latin. Who benefits? And the answer is that these giant contractors, these giant defense contractors, and, you know, most people don't realize that almost, I think it's half or more than half of all of the discretionary dollars of the federal government goes into military spending. And this is literally, it's 10 times the amount spent by the next largest, which is China. And then the other countries, you know, the former Soviet Union and so on, are just a fraction of that. The United States spends such a huge amount of money on this, and where does it go? It goes into this giant maw of these huge companies that have this endless range of contracts that they receive. Now, the worst thing possible for them, of course, is an uninterrupted period of peace, which we did have for a number of years under the Clinton administration, and they, you know, they talked about the peace dividend, but this was really not good for business. And so now we have this situation of sort of perpetual war, thanks to the 9/11 attack, and thanks to Bush then launching this unnecessary war with Iraq. There's no end in sight, and Obama, even if he wanted to, doesn't have any easy way out of this.
And I think people really need to know that the United States spends more for its military than all the rest of the nations in the world put together. I mean, this is amazing. Of course, going right along with this is a massive, you know, prison population. We have one in every 33 American people are in prison, population or parole. Maybe that's American men. One in every three American men is in prison, population of control. One out of every three black men between 21 and 31 in prison, population of parole. And it all goes together, you know, with this all-powerful government and the people all being entertained by watching television and never really looking seriously about what's going on in the world.
Well, that's right. It's very hard to get people's attention. And this is one of the struggles that we've had with Family of Secrets. It's so full of material that really, you know, opens your eyes. This is not my phrase, but this is something that I'm constantly being told by people who write to me. But it's very hard to get people's attention. First of all, when you mention, you say we've got a book about the Bushes, they say they're out. I don't want to hear another word about them. They don't understand that what the Bushes represent is not just the Bushes themselves, but that they were actually enablers or facilitators of much more powerful forces. They don't understand that these forces continue to shape their world, that the taxes that they pay, that the job that they lost, that the relative who died overseas, that all of these things are connected. And that it's only when we begin trying to dig into the deep politics, the deeper history behind events, to tie things together, to research these things, to begin talking about it, that we begin really living in a successful and vibrant democracy.
And I think you're absolutely right, and I think your book is very important, and I think that this is what it's all about. The Bushes were simply a manifestation of this power structure behind the scenes that really, of course, runs our nation, runs and has an effect on running the whole world. Well, my telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you're out there across America and you have a question for Russ Baker, his book, Family of Secrets. As you know, we do lots of interviews, but we don't carry most of the books. We're going to carry this one because we think it's important. Let's go to Robert, who's calling us from Iowa. Again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Robert, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I didn't want to interrupt your interview here, but I have a book before me as we speak entitled George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography by Webster Griffin Tarpley and Antine Chutkin. It was published in 1992, and I just wanted to say that after I first read this book, I knew that American politics was hopeless. This is a real groundbreaker for me. I wonder if your guest had any knowledge of this book.
Well, sure. In the course of researching Family of Secrets, I acquired more than 500 books of all kinds.
500.
And I must say that book is certainly in my library.
All right. Yeah. There you are, Robert. And certainly the things that we need to get people reading and studying and then get the message out to others, because I think Russ's point is so well taken. The Bushes are simply a manifestation of the illness that permeates every aspect of our society. Anything else you want to say before I let you go?
No, that's just all I wanted to say.
God bless, and thanks so much for calling again. Right. That was Robert calling from Iowa. And if you do have a question for our guest, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, certainly is the book moving fairly well? I think it's a well-written book, all sorts of information I didn't know about, and you tied together a lot of loose ends. What about Prescott Bush? Most people don't talk about Prescott Bush and the fact that he was in a very prominent position during World War II, and there is some sort of relationship between Prescott Bush and the Nazis. What was that all about?
That issue is fairly complicated. I don't go in great detail on that subject, primarily, again, because a lot has been written about it and because I was trying to focus on HW and W. But in essence, Prescott Bush and his investment banking firm, Brown Brothers Harriman, had been involved, deeply involved with Germany prior to the rise of Hitler. And then when he came to power, and as it became more difficult for the financiers that had backed him to continue their financial operations in the West, they turned to surrogates. And the records show that Brown Brothers Harriman and Prescott Bush in particular played a very key role as fronting for these interests. There was a congressional investigation, allegations of trading with the enemy, and so that's certainly an interesting period for the Bush family. You also have Prescott Bush in the 1950s. This is in Family of Secrets as well. He takes a trip to Hong Kong as a U.S. senator to find out what went wrong with an attempt to assassinate the Chinese leader Chou Enlai by the poisoning of his rice bowl at a banquet. And so he was already early in his career, this is the grandfather of George W. Bush, taking an interest in assassinations of leaders and in playing a kind of an unofficial oversight capacity with the CIA. By the way, one of the very important themes I think that your readers will draw when they get a chance to read Family of Secrets, it is 500 and some pages, it's a long but I hope a thrilling read, they will come away with an understanding of the fact that the CIA is really not what it was supposed to be. When Harry Truman signed the National Security Act of 1947, he was under the impression that the CIA was not going to be a secret police. It was not going to be an agency carrying out all of these covert operations to influence governments. It was to be collecting information so that the President of the United States could make intelligent decisions.
But, of course, that's unfortunately not the way that it turned out. I think many people are very concerned today, not only about the CIA, but the other really even more important intelligence agency, the NSA, the National Security Administration, or, as they like to say, no such agency. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. Well, Russ, we got 3 minutes. I know it's late back there, but we've got Woody calling us from Iowa. Woody, are you listening on shortwave or internet? How are you hearing us?
On shortwave, don't you stand?
Okay, coming in real well?
Fairly well, yeah.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a 1-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-7.
We have had several interviews with Russ. If you'd like to get copies of those, why, you could call the same number, 1-800-544-8927. And having met George Bush and having had him look me directly in the eye and lied to me, and I knew he was lying, he really took an awful lot of people in. He was very convincing, very charming, but of course he was not a man of integrity. But then, of course, if you really want to understand the forces that work behind the scenes that placed the George Herbert Walker Bush and George W. Bush into the presidency and positions of leadership, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness, or get the DVD that goes with that. We've got a great new DVD. It's called The Trilateral Commission. And why is that important? Why? Because between 1976 and 2008, every president and or vice president of the United States was a member of the Trilateral Commission, as was certainly six of the eight presidents of World Bank, eight of the ten World Trade Representatives, as were seven of the 12 secretaries of state and 9 of the 12 secretaries of defense, and certainly 3 of the 4 chairmen of the Federal Reserve System before Ben Bernanke, and certainly there are 11 members of the Trilateral Commission who are directing the President of the United States, Barack Obama, today. You need to get this DVD on the Trilateral Commission. Let me recommend it. It is excellent. Very well done. It's the talk that Pat Wood gave when he was at our conference. And, of course, with a PowerPoint presentation, you can go over the material, you can learn it, and you can begin to present it to others. We do have a power structure now. The Trilateral Commission is simply part of the Brotherhood of Darkness, but there are very powerful spiritual forces behind that, which is why my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is important. Why my talk on the forbidden secret is so important, and you need to get the syllabus with that. Why my talk on the financial Armageddon, and what the real reason is behind the fact that they have intentionally and purposely precipitated this financial crisis that is bringing down the financial structure of every nation in the world, and why they are going to destroy the value of our currency and impoverish the American people. You need to understand what's going on is not simply by accident, and Barack Obama is simply a pawn in this whole game. Well, of course, the talk then is the financial Armageddon, and there's a syllabus that goes with that, which will give you a lot of the most famous speeches on this subject, but you'll never get them all together in one spot, which is what we've done, and then you'll get some material from Pat Wood and my newsletters, and we think that the syllabus is important. It's got the April report from the Congressional Oversight Commission that's been trying to find out what happened to the TARP funds. Nobody can find out what happened to the TARP funds. The $7 billion, we know that some of it was given to the major banks, and some of it has been given to other banks, but really trying to keep track of what it's all about, they have an oversight panel, which is headed by a former professor of law at Harvard University, but they can't even figure out what's really happening with the funds. And billions and billions and billions of dollars have disappeared, and the Federal Reserve System, which is going to now control our entire economy, according to Barack Obama, they have simply given out $2 trillion, and the Federal Reserve, which is a privately owned central bank, not part of the United States, has been given control of our economy, and nobody even knows who owns the Federal Reserve. They've never been independently audited, and they've given away $2 trillion of your money, and they won't tell Congress, and they won't respond to the orders of the judges who have ordered them to reveal it. Everything is done in secret. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. You need our talk on the financial Armageddon. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Christopher Centeno. And he is a physician who practices in Colorado. And he has been certainly instrumental in pushing research and putting together information on stem cell research. Now, we had a guest about a week ago who was talking on stem cell research, and not embryonic stem cell research, but adult stem cell research, and the miraculous really cures or amelioration of symptoms that had come about because of the use of stem cell research. And certainly Dr. Centeno actually utilizes to some extent in his practice, but I'm going to let him tell you about what's going on, what he's learned. Thank you very much for being with us this time of night.
Hi, Stan. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about your medical practice, how you got involved in stem cells, and then what you've learned about stem cells, and, of course, the exciting things that are happening not only here in this country, but predominantly throughout the world.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. Yeah, I got involved in using adult patient-derived, that's adult stem cells from the same patient, about 4 years ago. We were working with one of the local universities who was using this type of adult stem cells in orthopedic injuries, actually in racehorses, having a lot of good success for orthopedic injuries, and we spent about a year moving that to a human model, another year just doing basic research on knees and hips and lumbar discs, and then I've spent about the last 2 years treating patients. And it's interesting because adult stem cells are so much further along in preclinical research and clinical research than embryonic stem cells, and I think that's something a lot of people don't know.
Well, I think that one of the big problems is that, of course, what they do is they focus our attention in this issue, this as they do with so many other issues, on the wrong debate. The issue is not, should we be using embryonic stem cells? Should we be concerned because of the destruction of human life? Should we simply withhold treatments from people who might be benefited from the use of embryonic stem cells? The issue is not embryonic stem cells at all. The issue is, what about adult stem cells? What about the exciting things that are happening to relieve pain and suffering and extend human life with adult stem cells? And that, of course, is not even being debated or mentioned today. So basically, after 4.5 years, what have you learned?
Well, we've learned that you can use adult-derived stem cells to treat orthopedic conditions. What I mean by that is folks with chronic osteoarthritis of the knee, chronic osteoarthritis of the hip, ankle, shoulder, and even though it took us a while, we can also now use them to treat lumbar disc bulges. So basically, just to help folks avoid significant big surgeries like joint replacement. So that's what we've learned.
Well, Christian, I, as an orthopedic surgeon, I did literally probably thousands, at least a thousand lumbar discs operations and back fusions. And certainly, usually they were pretty good, but if they weren't good, they were a disaster for the doctor and for the patient. So the idea that there are alternative treatments that are suddenly available, it really is exciting to me, and I want to learn a lot more, and I hope the people of the listening audience will as well. I think this is one of the most exciting things that's happened, well, that I can remember. Well, first of all, would you like to give us an idea just of how you collect the stem cells, what you do with the stem cells, and then how you administer these stem cells to the patient? Now, are you in physical medicine? Are you in what specific branch of medicine are you in?
Yeah, I have two boards, one in physical medicine rehab, the other in interventional pain management. So we've gotten very good, obviously, at driving needles throughout the body to help patients in chronic pain. And so what we do with the procedure is we start where we take stem cells from an area of the back of the hip at the PSIS. We numb that up very well using an X-ray, live X-ray fluoroscopy. We use a needle to pull out a bone marrow aspirate. It looks like thick blood. Interesting enough that the patient doesn't feel all that much when we're doing that, so we keep the patients generally just on either under light anesthesia or awake with local anesthesia. And then we send it off to the lab. We have a cell biology lab in Colorado where we process those cells, grow them to bigger numbers over about 2 weeks, and then re-inject those under X-ray guidance in various parts of the body. So that might be in the knee and going into a very specific part of the knee. That might be in the low back, going to a very specific part of the low back. And the procedures are all a little bit different depending on where the target is and where the target tissue is we're trying to help.
Well, now, Chris, would you just inject into the knee joint, into the lateral compartment? Would you inject into the supportive tissues, the ligaments, the synovium? Where would you inject, say, in the knee?
We can do it a lot of different places, but let me describe to you, if we're trying to get, let's say, an osteochondral defect, a hole in the cartilage on the medial femoral condyle, we'll put the patient in a 90-degree position for the hip and knee. We'll then go use the MRI to map the area where we want to treat. We'll then inject in very small aliquot stem cells in a grid-like pattern over that area using gravity to help attach the cells. And we get about 60 to 70% attachment of those cells to the defect in the first 10 minutes. And so patient positioning becomes really important when you're trying to get the cells to go to a specific spot. Now, a long time ago when we first started doing this, we would actually just inject the cells intra-articular, and the results were not as good.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris, our guest is Dr. Chris Centeno, and we're talking about adult stem cell research. And, Chris, Dr. Centeno has a degree in pain management and certainly in physical medicine, and as a result why he does, well, of course, I used to do a lot of the same things as an orthopedic surgeon. He's probably much more skillful than I was, and he has, of course, the advantage of much more, of course, knowledge in this field, because this field was totally unknown when I was practicing medicine. And he was talking about an area, say, in the knee joint, where there's an area where the cartilage is simply worn away on one of the condyles of the knee, the inner or the outer condyle. condyle. We call it medial or lateral condyle. And then they have to position the patient very, very specifically. And rather than simply injecting the stem cells into the knee joint, into the lateral, into, the, say, the medial joint compartment, they will actually try to lay the cells right on top of this defect in the cartilage. And, of course, the problem is that there's you have suddenly bone rubbing on bone, and what you want to do is get a cartilage to regrow in that area. Can you actually, by putting these adult stem cells there, get cartilage to regrow? And are these stem cells in any way being modified so they would have a predilection to regenerate cartilage cells?
Yeah, we do have MRI evidence that we can get cartilage to regrow and repair. The cells haven't really been modified at all. We do give them small clues in culture before they go back into the patient that'll generally move them towards differentiation to cartilage, but not really modified in any way. These are your cells. They're just grown to bigger numbers. They might be given exposure to a medication while they're in culture to help them move in one direction or the other, but still your cells, just a lot more of them.
And of course, the thing is that they can also modify them for the heart or for the lung or for the brain or for the spinal cord or for the pancreas, and certainly there are techniques, but we're talking really about what Dr. Santana does, and since he's really dealing with physical medicine, he's dealing primarily with the spine and with the extremities, which of course is what an orthopedic surgeon would deal with. So basically, of course, they can then treat arthritis. What about arthritis of the hip? Because this is such a painful and disabling condition, and do you actually inject that stem cells into the joint? Or do you put them into the ever inject them into the bone there and the head of the femur, where of course you have all the cystic lesions? How do you approach say arthritis of the hip? I know you're doing it under MRI or CT scan control, or at least under X-ray control, but the hip is pretty hard to get to specific parts of the femoral head.
It is. In fact, we have treated AVN, or avascular necrosis, where the femur bone starts to collapse. And in that situation, we'll drive under X-ray using a trocar. So for this, the patient is under just IVX, this anesthesia. We'll drive to a specific spot under X-ray where the lesion lives, and then place the cells right at the lesion. For general hip osteoarthritis, we tend to treat more just the weight-bearing area of the femoral head, and again, putting the patient in a position where the gravity will help the cells attach to that weight-bearing portion of the femoral head. We've also treated hip labrum by injecting directly into the labral lesion with some good success as well.
And for the neophyte out there, the labrum is the little cartilage lip that surrounds the rim of the acetabulum, or the cup that the head of the femur fits into. So basically then, as you do these things, and what percentage of the people actually seem to be improving with this stem cell treatment?
So it depends on obviously the severity of the disease when we start. But in general, if you look at all of our patients, about 8 in 10 of the knee patients are reporting significant improvement at 6 month and 12 month follow up. Approximately 7 in 10 or so of the hip patients. I think the difference in the hip versus the knee outcomes has a lot to do with, by the time we see a lot of the hip patients, as you know, many of them have big bony lesions, not only cartilage lesions, but the bone is starting to have problems with some of those big cysts. That's a little less common in the knee. By the time we see them, it's mostly just a cartilage problem, not a huge underlying bone integrity issue. as you know.
I've had two total hip operations. I know how painful the hips can be. Now, then you probably are dealing with a lot of athletic injuries. What about people, say, athletes with a sore shoulder or a sore elbow, especially certainly people who are professional athletes? I mean, this is vitally important that they, you know, they get their tissues functioning again, functioning properly. I mean, some of these are very, very highly paid athletes, and have you had an opportunity to utilize these techniques on any professional athletes?
Not yet any professional athletes. We've certainly treated college athletes. We've treated weekend warriors. I guess one of our more interesting successes there was a 67-year-old neurosurgeon from University of Pittsburgh who was an Ironman triathlete. He had run 6 Ironmans. And then about 5 years before we started seeing him, he had he basically went to see his orthopedic surgeon friend, who said, "Listen, Joe, you've lost all the cartilage on the medial or inside portion of your knee. My recommendation is you stop doing triathlons." And he stopped running for about 5 years. He sought us out. We treated him, and he was able to, at 67 years of age, do his 7th Hawaii full triathlon. So I think that's 112 miles biking and 26 miles running and I think a 3.1 mile swim. So he was able to do it, which is probably our best athlete story to date.
Well, I think that's an amazing, amazing accomplishment. But certainly the ability to relieve pain and to help revitalize the connective tissues and joints and cartilage, it certainly must be a very exciting thing for you.
It is. It's revolutionary for us because, as you know, in pain management, and I know you've seen a lot of spinal pain patients where, you know, you're sort of managing disease. And I think what stem cells will allow us all to do is to start treating and curing some things, or at least turning back the hands of time for a while in a certain area, which is really unique. I mean, a lot of neck pain and back pain management, as you know, is just trying to buy someone a couple years here, a couple years there. And this hopefully will allow us to do it very differently.
Well, you know, Chris, when you talk about treating backs and this, when we see these young athletes, football players, you know, and running full speed and then colliding with somebody else, and you realize, of course, all those discs in their back are simply compressing and then expanding again, and they can do that when they're young because they have a high fluid contact and a content in them, and that fluid and non-compressible and expands, and then, of course, it bulges the disc, and they're able to do this, you know, when they're young. But as you get older, while your connective tissues begin to get degenerative, and the nuclear material, the fluid that contains the fluid and the disc begins to dissipate, and so the disc dries out, becomes desiccated, as they say, and then sometimes the connective tissue will, that makes up the disc, the annulus, will rupture, and then, of course, the disc material comes out. What can you do to rejuvenate those discs? Can you help to bring them back to their normal, certainly, gelatinous state?
Yeah, it's really interesting. When we first started this, being in interventional pain and seeing a lot of patients with back pain, one of my big goals was to do just that. And you could do it all day in animal models, meaning if you took rabbits and created an artificial disc injury by sucking out the inside of that disc that you were just talking about, you could regenerate that disc pretty easily. But one of the interesting things was, as we switched to doing humans, it became very, very difficult. So it took us about 4 years, maybe 3 years, to figure out how to do that. But we now are seeing evidence on MRI of that disc, inner part of the disc, starting to hold on to water again, so it's getting brighter on those T2 MRI images, which is great, because that's what you could do on the animal models pretty readily. And in fact, we have a young, I think she's about 40 now, professional model who is now going back to modeling, who had a dark disc, meaning a disc that wasn't, it was dehydrated, not holding on to water well, And we've now been able to make that disc bright on MRI, get rid of her pain, get rid of her leg pain. After not being able to model for 3 or 4 years because she couldn't stand still long enough, she's now back doing professional modeling. So we can now do that. It took a number of years to figure out the process to actually make that happen in a human versus just a rabbit, but we can now do that.
Well, how do you do it? Do you have to do something specific to the cells? Certainly the slipping of the needle into that disc is not that difficult. What's the trick?
Yeah, the trick, let me describe the trick. We all think of the, if you think of the inside of the disc as the Sahara Desert, meaning it's got very poor nutrition, and you drop off a bunch of people in the middle of Sahara Desert without any type of provisions, and they're not survival trained, they're not going to do well and not going to last long in that kind of environment. We actually are able to condition the cells in culture to make them tougher, so to speak, to survive in the Sahara Desert of the disc, and we're able to provide some additional provisions for the cells once they get there so they can survive as well. So we're dropping them off survival trained and with the food and water necessary to survive.
That is truly amazing. Well, I guess, of course, it's Dr. Chris Centennial. And if you're out there, you have a question, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Chris, certainly now you're dealing, of course, with the musculoskeletal conditions. What about some of the other, is there any?
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
100,000, when we take them out of the body in general, it's sometimes a bit more, sometimes a bit less. We can grow that number to usually 10 to 100 million over about 10 days to 17 days, so about 2 weeks. So we can grow them to 10 to 100 million. And, you know, it's interesting. We've seen that some patients are much better at growing stem cells than others. And we've really seen some interesting effects of some prescription medications on cells. I mean, we've had patients come in on a certain medication. We've tried to grow out their cells, have failed, have not gotten a lot of cells, take them off that medication, do it again, and then have them really do well with growing cells. So we've learned a lot about that over 4 years.
Of what specific medications would slow down the reproduction of these stem cells?
Well, it's interesting. Two of the drug classes, we don't know why this is, that seem to hit them really hard. One is some of the antihypertensives or the blood pressure meds. The other major drug class is actually the statin drugs, believe it or not, seem to be very hard on these cells. Another drug class is some of the high-dose anti-inflammatory corticosteroids, you know, prednisone, things like that. Now, the prednisone is pretty well known. There's a lot of publication on it hitting mesenchymal stem cells. The other two, not well published yet, and we are just sort of collecting data, and at some point next year we'll probably publish on the effects of some of these medication classes on stem cells grown in the lab.
Well, do you think that, Chris, that taking then these medications just for the average individual could actually hinder the stem cell availability in the circulating blood?
Yeah, I don't want to draw any big conclusions yet, but our information would hint that some of these medications may sort of give you a double whammy, so to speak. As you know, a lot of medications have a direct toxicity effect on the liver or the kidney in some patients. So patients take them for a while and their liver functions might go up or their kidney functions might go down. We think that there probably is also some hit to the mesenchymal stem cells. And that's interesting because those are the cells that are supposed to help maintain the body and repair those very same organs. So there are mesenchymal stem cells resident in the kidney. There are mesenchymal stem cells resident in the liver that should help repair those. So that's one of the reasons why we've kind of kept some of that data close to the chest until we get enough patients to really make a big statement about it.
All right, well, we won't pin you down on that at all. Maybe we can talk to you again in a year or two, and you can keep us abreast of what's going on. Now, are you, of course, keeping abreast of what's going on with, say, people working in the cardiac field or the pulmonary field or in other fields as far as stem cell research is concerned?
Absolutely. It's pretty amazing, some of the things that are happening. This very same stem cell line that we're talking about, adult mesenchymal stem cells, can help repair cardiac muscle after a heart attack. So there, what they're doing is they're taking those cells, and they're usually floating a catheter as if they were going to place a stent, but instead of putting a stent in, they're injecting those mesenchymal stem cells directly into the coronary arteries, or sometimes even just directly intramuscular into the heart muscle. And so I would say at this point, a lot of research going on in that area, a lot of research going on in pulmonary lung injury as well. So it's there's some pretty amazing things happening, especially in cardiac. It's pretty literally, I think we could see within the next 5 to 10 years a scenario where anyone having a heart attack gets a cell injection to help protect the cardiac muscle.
Well, I think really, of course, with people who have a severely damaged heart from myocardial infarction, in other words, they have a heart attack and the muscle dies, you lose enough muscle, there's not much you can do about it other than get a heart transplant. They're hard to come by. You've got to be on anti-rejection drugs the rest of your life. But imagine if you could actually regrow your own heart muscle. I mean, this to me, because when I'm 80, I've had a bypass and an aortic replacement. I'm doing pretty well, but the thought that this down the line that this treatment's going to be available to others or perhaps even to myself is truly exciting. We're going to be back in just a moment. If you have a question, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. I guess this is Dr. Chris Centeno. And what about helping people who are diabetic? Certainly this is a terrible, terrible disease with terrible complications. Is there any place for stem cell replacement as far as diabetes is concerned, a stem cell treatment?
Yeah, there are multiple animal models right now, Stan, where they take this stem cell line, mesenchymal stem cells, also some other stem cell lines, and precondition those cells to start hitting in the direction of beta islet cells, which are the native cells of a pancreas that produce insulin, and inject those directly into the pancreas with some fairly good results in animal models, meaning in animals what you see is their high blood sugar levels normalize and go down in that situation. So I think that there will be stem cell treatments for both type 1 and type 2 diabetes. There are animal models now available that show that's all feasible.
And so now it's just a matter of the people who are working on it experimentally. Now, is most of the work, most of the research in stem cells being done here in the United States, or is it being done throughout the world?
Really throughout the world. There are certain hotbed countries. It's interesting.
Hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Dr. Chris Centeno. And before we go on, I would like you to go ahead and get out your telephone number, your address, or a website, or anybody would like to know more about the work that you're doing. Dr. Centeno?
Yes.
Do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out?
Yes. Yeah, sure. Our website is regenex.com. So it's www.regenexx. There's two X's. .com. So regenex with two X's. .com. And that's really the best way to get in touch with us. You can see there the kind of work we're doing in the orthopedic and pain management world. A lot of information there as well if you're just researching stem cells. If you don't have an orthopedic problem and you have a more serious issue, we get emails from patients with a lot of different types of diseases, and to the extent that we can hook them up with someone who's doing credible work in that area, we try to do that as well.
Well, now, Chris, before we came back from the break, I was asking you really if there were centers in other countries where they were doing this. It's primarily being done here in the United States or throughout the world. And you were beginning to say that there were a number of hotbeds across the world. Our telephone number, again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question, but please go right ahead. Whereabouts is this work being done, and is this for specific types of treatment in specific areas?
Yeah, there are countries that are big hotbeds. It's interesting. For whatever reason, there's a lot of research coming out of Japan. Japan has been very, very big in orthopedics. There's a lot of neural stem cell work being done in China, and stem cell work of many different types, but very focused on cardiac and blood vessel diseases coming out of Israel and Peru. So not quite sure why any of those countries specifically are big in this area. They've just sort of become where a lot of the research is being done. Obviously, there's a lot being done here in the U.S. as well.
Well, now, certainly one of the things that's always been very intriguing to me is the idea that people who had a spinal cord lesion, at least there have been stories about some people actually being able to recover at least some function. Of course, one of the dictums that I was always taught, if you had a complete spinal cord lesion, you had a complete spinal cord lesion for the rest of your life, and nothing was ever going to change it. And it didn't happen. I mean, if you hadn't, it started to improve within a month or two, why, that was the way you were going to be. But why we keep hearing rumors that sometimes there can be improvement with this type of therapy. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that if you look at the stem cell research to date, in that area, what is clear that if you have an acute injury, so if you get injured tomorrow with a spinal cord injury and you place stem cells in the injury area, whether it's a direct injection into the area or just into that intradural space, so the space kind of around the area, that those stem cells will assist with neural repair. They will help that area grow back together. The harder part, I think, and the bigger challenge is going to be in the chronically spinal cord injured folks, so someone who's been injured for a number of years, and in bridging that gap, because there's some scar formation that forms there. And I think all of that is doable as well. I think that may be a little bit more difficult. Some of the research there is promising, but not quite yet there. But on the acute spinal cord injury side, if you had an acute spinal cord injury tomorrow, and getting a stem cell injection in that area would definitely be something, if it were me or someone in my family, that I would pursue. But as far as the chronic spinal cord injury, that may take a little while longer still.
One of the most appealing concepts, the way that they were able to get the embryonic stem cell research grant. I think it was a $3 billion bond issue here in the state of California for embryonic stem cell research was Michael Fox and the fact that as a 40-year-old actor, he has Parkinson's disease, a progressive disease that really is so incapacitating. and leads to muscle rigidity and tremors and all of these things. Is there going to be any place with adult stem cells as far as the treatment of Parkinson's disease or Huntington's disease or some of these other progressive neurological disorders?
Yeah, there certainly are animal models that are now starting to appear in the treatment of Parkinson's disease. They've now gotten adult stem cells to start to produce dopamine in the brain. And in Huntington's chorea as well, there's been some advancement there. So I think adult stem cells will be viable treatments in the future for those diseases. And it's kind of interesting, Stan, you've kind of alluded to this, but recently Dr. Oz on Oprah kind of brought up that he was convinced, certainly in the cardiac world, that there's so much adult stem cell work going on now, and it's so much further ahead than embryonic stem cells, that he felt that most of what we would see in the future, at least for the next decade or so, would be adult stem cells. And I would tend to agree with him. There's an awful lot of things going on. It's not to at all state that embryonic cells may not have a place at some point. It's just for whatever reason, the research is so much further ahead on the adult stem cell side right now in pretty much all of those areas.
Well, of course, what we've heard, you know, is that, first of all, you have two problems with the embryonic stem cells. One is the rejection factor, because, of course, it's from a different a DNA makeup. And the other is that sometimes when you inject the embryonic stem cells, you end up with a teratoma, which is I don't have to tell you what it is, but certainly for the listener out there, it's a tumor that's got all sorts of things in it. I mean, it's got, you know, muscle and teeth and bone and cardiac cells. It's got all sorts of different types of cells in it, and it's a very, very disturbing thing to have. You wouldn't want one of those things growing in your brain being treated for Parkinson's disease. This seems to be a real disadvantage to the embryonic stem cells, at least at this time in their stage of development. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I think there are a number of disadvantages, and I think you've brought out two very big disadvantages. One is obviously that these cells are not meant to repair. I mean, adult stem cells in your body are already primed for a repair function, so to repair something and then be done with what they're doing. Embryonic stem cells, as you know, are designed to make a person, so there are times that you will get a teratoma, or which is sort of a tumor that's trying to be a person, or you'll get a tumor there. Those are all big issues to be solved with embryonic stem cells. And I think the other thing that you brought up is very important. They did a research study on rats. This is just 2 or 3 years ago, where they took even adult stem cells from a rat line that was bred to have osteoporosis, so brittle bones. And they took those adult stem cells from the osteoporosis rat, and they placed them into normal healthy rats, and found that the normal healthy rats got osteoporosis. And so even with adult stem cells from another person, there may be a way to transmit genes from one person to another. Now, there are times that you can use that for good. They just recently did that to help treat AIDS. There was a gentleman that had AIDS, and they took stem cells from a person who had a genetic tweak that meant that they could never get the AIDS virus, and they put them into someone with AIDS and cured his AIDS. That was published in, I think, the New England Journal of Medicine, or JAMA, just last year. So you can use those genes from the other person for good, but obviously there are times when those genes from the other person can not be so good. So I think for right now, until all that's figured out, we probably should stick to using the patient's own stem cells.
Well, now I've heard stories about people with anterior lateral myosclerosis, that's ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, and that at least some of them claim to have had a dramatic improvement after stem cell treatment. Of course, this is a progressive degenerative disease of the spinal cord. Is there anything you've heard about along this line?
Yeah, most of those patients, as far as I can tell, because we'll get contacted by some of them every once in a while, have gone to China to actually get what sounds like fetal stem cells. I actually have been in China a few times because we're licensing our procedure over there for Chinese orthopedists to use. And that seems to be what most of those patients are receiving. Now, there are some patients here in the U.S. who have also received their own adult stem cells for that same disease. And I think you had Barbara Hansen on recently, and she probably knows more about that sort of what's going on in that area as far as treatment is concerned. But that's what I've heard so far.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And this is really one of the most exciting advances in medicine that I have ever encountered. And certainly, I graduated from medical school back in about 1952, so we'll be at our 55th anniversary of medical school graduation recently. There weren't very many of us left, but I was the youngest. I think I was the youngest or second youngest member of my class, so hopefully we'll be around for a while longer. But I certainly is watching the progression of new treatments come in. Nothing really to me has been quite as exciting as the idea of being able to train our own cells to regenerate and repair our, worn out, degenerative or damaged tissues. So basically, what sort of response are you getting from your other practitioners? Are they a little skeptical about this sort of thing, or are they as intrigued as I am?
You know, it's interesting. One of the if we had to look at all the patients we've treated, one of the biggest groups of patients we've treated actually are healthcare providers. That neurosurgeon I told you about, we've treated multiple MD physicians, recently an MD PhD from Harvard who flew out to us for us to treat his hip. So most of the physicians we've talked to are very excited about what we're doing. They seem to be very willing to let us treat them. We've treated nurses as well, physical therapists, et cetera. So most of the healthcare providers, I think, are very excited about this, but realize that this is still in its infancy. And I think if you're the type of healthcare provider that needs loads and loads of large-scale clinical trials, no one's there yet. And so I think those folks will probably wait and reserve judgment as to what's going on. But we've had a lot of patients who are physicians, I think, because their reaction is very similar to yours, and that is, gee, I know the alternatives. The alternatives involve some big surgeries. If I can get away without the big surgery, I'd like to try to do that.
What about, Cindy, if you have a chronic tendonitis hasn't ruptured yet, will these stem cells actually tend to rejuvenate the tendon?
They will. We always obviously work with those patients on trying to figure out if there's something happening biomechanically that might be making that tendonitis worse. But we have treated chronic tendonitis as well. One of the more interesting cases we have is a lady with chronic hip bursitis, actually iliopsoas bursitis in the front of the hip. And because of her anterior or front of the hip type pain, she and someone did an x-ray of her hip and saw some moderate degenerative disease. She actually had a hip replacement recommended. We took an MRI, saw this big swollen bursa, injected cells into the bursa, and she's about a year, year and a half out, and has not had a return of that chronic bursitis. Now, what happened there, is it an immune modulation effect? Is it a rejuvenation of the bursa? I can't say I'm completely sure about that, but it did work for her. And in that chronic tendonitis situation, it would also likely work well.
All right, well, let's go to Bert, who's calling from Santa Cruz, California. Hi, Bert, how you doing?
What's good?
Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, the detail about gravity being used to help the cells lodge correctly. That seems like an odd detail. And was it a serendipitous discovery? Is there an anecdote about that? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, Richard, asking about why you decided that it worked better when you had gravity, you know, putting these cells and getting them to stick down in the area where that you wanted them to go to work.
Yeah, it was interesting. When we first started doing this work, we just assumed that you would just place them into the joint, so into the knee joint. We were good at placing things in various joints, including knee joints, under x-ray guidance, so we wouldn't place our needle into the knee. We would inject a small amount of contrast to document that, in fact, we were inside the knee joint, and then chase that with cells. We saw some reasonable results, but we then picked up on some research by a gentleman in Japan by the name of Sakai, who was actually injecting cells into specific areas of the joint and some of his animal models, and he had three or four different animal model experiments that he had published on, showed that when he actually got the cells to attach to a specific area, there was much more regeneration of that specific lesion than if you just placed the cells in the larger joint. Placing the cells in the larger joint, the cells would tend to transit in and out of the synovial tissue and not necessarily stay or home to the lesion where you wanted them to have their effect. So that's how we actually started working on that gravity model.
And I think this is still in the experimental and developmental stage, but you said sometimes you try it, and if it works, why, you try it again, and if it doesn't work, you go to something else. But certainly, I think Dr. Centeno is on the cutting edge of some of the most exciting technology that I've heard of in a good long while. And of course, we pioneered a lot of old joint infections, facet injections in the back when I was practicing orthopedics, but they've got a long way from there. In fact, I'd be probably sort of lost in the practice of all the new and exciting things that are coming along. Our guest has been Dr. Chris Centeno. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, Dr. Centeno, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a 1-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Of tapes on Lyme disease. Of course, Lyme disease looks, everything points to the fact it's genetically created into brand new disease, right along with another of a number of other brand new diseases never existed before that are plaguing humanity today. In fact, you go back and you read what Zygmunt Brzezinski wrote in his book, but Between Two Ages, and he wrote this in 1970. And at the bottom of the page in a footnote, somewhere between page 55 and 65, he talked about how in the future we'd be able to, and he's talking about 30 years in the future, quoting someone who said we'd be able to create storms and droughts and new chronic diseases. Oh boy, we've sure got our share of new chronic diseases. One of them is Lyme disease. We've got a great four-tape set on Lyme disease, and we've got four-tape set on AIDS, and of course we have all sorts of information on four-tape set on why do we still have cancer, and then on Laetril, the treatment for Laetril that has been suppressed by the government because it was so effective. We have a four-tape set on the Brzezinski breakthrough, the story of Dr. Brzezinski, who had and still has a very effective treatment for cancer that has been actively suppressed by the Federal Drug Administration, has done everything they could to suppress the availability of effective treatment and license programs that were really ineffective here in the United States. And I'm speaking of specific drugs like the statin drugs. And when they tell you that they give you a 30% decrease in the incidence of cancer and stroke, dying from a heart attack or stroke, and then of course you read the fine print and you find out that what they really mean is if you have 100 people who take the placebo, three of them will die of a heart attack or stroke, and you have 100 people taking the statin drug, Lipitor in this case, why only two die? And of course that's a 30% difference, isn't it? And on that basis, why, of course, they're letting doctors, encouraging doctors all across the country to poison their patients with something that destroys the liver and destroys the mitochondria. And the doctors really don't know that. And so this is why you need to get our four tapes set on statin drugs. And we're carrying a new book on statin drugs. All of these things are vitally important. You really need to get our book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. It's by Dr. Blaylock. Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. And there really are secrets that can save your life. You need to get Russell Blaylock's excellent DVD on health nutrition and behavior. Nutrition and behavior, because so many psychiatric and psychological programs are dramatically increased, or improved, I should say, with proper nutrition. But you're never going to hear this. And I know when I practiced medicine, I couldn't believe these things. I thought these people in Santa Cruz, where I live, were all crazy because they were going to the health food store and paying so much more for their food. But, well, I figured that maybe they're a lot smarter than I am. Certainly they help wonderfully when we trying to keep water fluoridation out of this area, and they were absolutely right on the water fluoridation, despite the fact that the Dental Association and the Medical Association wanted water fluoridation. It's terribly harmful. You need to get my talk on the hidden agenda, the syllabus on the hidden agenda, the four tape set on water fluoridation, the four tape set on aspartame and MSG, the poisoning our people. There's so many things going on from the health point of view you need to learn about. So remember our number, it's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our webpage at radioliberty.com and look at all the four tape sets and DVDs we have. New one by Dr. Blaylock on vaccines and brain development. That's vaccines and brain development. It's radioliberty.com, our number, 1-800-544-8927. But please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.